Hello and welcome to the first edition of At Home This Morning of 2021, which is being presented jointly by Chris English and by me, Richard Davis. I think we can all agree that 2020 is a year that we'd probably rather forget about on the whole, but there have been some good times, and I've been going back through our archive trying to find some of them so that I could repeat the items we've previously broadcast, perhaps to remind us that things aren't so bad after all. Chris is being even more positive and looking forward. So without further ado, let's get on to our first item, which is one of my reminiscences. Back in August, the people of Rottingdean decided to hold a scarecrow competition in order to cheer things up. Our reporter, Chris Seymour, went along to find out more.
Well, I'm talking to Graham Shepherd here in Rottingdean in our makeshift studio about the scarecrow competition which is being held in Rottingdean this month of August. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Chris. Good morning. Good morning. Nice to see you again.
So, tell us about the scarecrow competition. What's it all about?
Well, it started because David Hunt, who lives in Saltdean but is very heavily involved in the village, he was chatting to me on the phone. Of course, the Rottingdean Village Fair sadly didn't happen this year, and he just said in passing, how about a scarecrow competition? Well, when he said it to Steph and I initially, I thought, well, no, I'm not quite sure about that. But then we thought it through, because the fact people have scarecrows in their own front gardens or shop windows, and of course, social distancing wouldn't be a problem and people wandering around. So we thought we'd give it a go, and it took off like that, really.
How many people have entered?
Well, we started off with 10, and then we pushed along a bit, and now in the end we had about 35, which for an inaugural event was absolutely excellent and really surprising, actually. And it's been very, very successful.
And these are all local Rottingdean residents?
Yes, it's just in Rottingdean, and it stretches from the north of Rottingdean through to central Rottingdean and also up into Rottingdean Heights. So it's rather nice because people can walk round and enjoy meeting other people. And what's been the big benefit is people being able to chat to each other and to go to places in Rottingdean perhaps they haven't been to before. So it's been really quite an eye-opener in a sense, really.
And it's for the benefit of the Rottingdean residents as well?
Yes, it's just for people to enjoy. And then we did a judging of it. And Linda Hyde, I don't even know if you know Linda Hyde, she was a former mayor and councillor and an alderman. I asked her to be the judge. So I walked round with her on the first morning, and we started at 10 and finished at 4 because we knocked on every door and spoke to the people who'd entered, and we had a good chat. It was a real privilege, actually. And then we gave prizes it was just awards, really, for first to fourth. And then everybody got a recognition. So we had the recognition for the cutest scarecrow, the wisest scarecrow, the most athletic scarecrow, the most literate scarecrow. And everybody was really delighted with it.
Do you plan to do this next year again?
Yes, I think so. I think it's one of those things. I mean, even if the village fair went ahead, I think it'd be nice to have in tandem with the village fair, because we were surprised, really, by the mix of scarecrows that we got. They weren't just the traditional sort. We had mermaids. We had Jacob Rees-Mogg lying across a bench, which was excellent. We had Rudyard Kipling. And up at Tudor Close, we had the seven Cluedo characters, because Tudor Close, that's where it was based on up there. We had two scarecrows getting married on either side of a door. We had a little child scarecrow up in Neville Road, which is absolutely gorgeous. Of course, we had Boris Johnson as a scarecrow, and he got the prize for the most anxious scarecrow. We were trying to think something appropriate, and that's what we came up with. And then an amazing one, which was up the stables up in Bayshill Road, and it was a scarecrow up in a tree. It was someone who'd been riding a horse and been catapulted up into the tree, and so it was sort of a reincarnation of that. And anyway, that's a real good mix.
And do you have a favourite?
Oh, I don't. I thought the best one, and the one that got first prize, was in Coppers, and it's absolute masterpiece. It's quite beautiful, really. But I did like the ones also in Tudor Close, the seven ones. But I think also the child was the cutest one up in Neville Road, was particularly good. And there was a mermaid, a fantastic mermaid, which is in Meadow Close and lying across somebody's garden, which is absolutely, absolutely delightful. But they're all fantastic. And the imagination from people is good. And people have really, really enjoyed it. And it really was a great success.
Yes, I was going to ask you, what's been from the local residents, what's been their opinion of it?
Well, really amazing, because we've got one in our house, actually, outside our front door. And people come along, we've been chatting to them. And people have really enjoyed just wandering around, really. It's an excuse, really, to be a bit nosy, to wander around other streets you don't normally go to, really. I think people tend to think Rottingdean is just the high street because it extends up into the Heights and further north as well, and people have really found it a pleasure. I think it also has diverted away from the C word, and it's nice something else to talk about, really, and to sort of chat about.
Fine. Well, we look forward to the competition next year as well, then.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Chris.
Chris Seymour was reporting on the Scarecrow competition that was held for the first time last August in Rottingdean and looks like becoming a regular fixture. Now it's over to Chris English to introduce the next item.
Now, Age UK, West Sussex, Brighton and Hove have been delivering packages. And what's in the packages? Well, to tell us, Rowan Hillier, Development Manager from the Brighton office. Good morning, Rowan.
Morning, Chris.
What's in these lovely packages you've been delivering?
Oh, they're full of all sorts of things. So we've been working with Brighton-based financial services company One Family, who very kindly donated us some money to bring some cheer this year. And so in these boxes, we've been sending out various sweet treats. So we've had gingerbread and Christmas cake, Christmas puddings, mince pies, a little book of stamps, and a blank Christmas card so that we can keep people connected. We've got a little Christmas card written from a local school child with a festive message. And all of this comes in our lovely Bags of Support, which is a campaign we run most of the way through the winter. And in there we have lots of useful information, magazines, an activity pack, reusable face masks, and lots of other little bits.
How were people selected to receive these parcels?
With the money that we had enough to deliver to 200 people in the Brighton area. We did deliver to 205. We snuck five more in. So we identify people. There's a lot of people accessing our services already. So we wanted to make sure we were reaching out to them. We also worked with some local partners. So we delivered to people like East Sussex Fire Rescue Service, who have interactions with people across the Christmas period, some sheltered housing schemes. We managed to catch quite a large range of people, we hope.
Because Christmas is now over and done with, did you find a lot of people were still suffering from being locked in with COVID?
Yeah, it's been a really challenging year for a lot of people. And I think Christmas and the festive period just makes it even more difficult. It's a time when we think about being with others. And I think that's particularly hard if we're not able to be with them. So that was really the aim, was just to try and support people at home and spread a little bit of joy and trying to keep people feeling like they've been thought of and feeling connected to others.
As we get into the new year, are you full of hope and optimism, or are you a bit depressed by everything that's happened over the last 12 months?
I think we have to keep positive. We've got to keep going and keep smiling. And actually, many of the people that I speak to, many of the older people I speak to on the phones, you know, they're really, you can hear that, you know, there's a lot of positivity there. And I think we've just got to carry on with that. So obviously, we're the impact of COVID-19, we're just continuing to support people however we can. That's our priority. And we've got lots of services that we can offer throughout the next year to support people.
So how can people get in touch? If people have never been in touch with you before, how should they start?
You're very welcome to give us a telephone call. Our telephone number is 01903 731 800. You can also send us an email. So our email address is info@ageukwsbh.org.uk. And you can also find information on our website, which is ageuk.org/West Sussex Brighton and Hove.
Have you got any campaigns coming up in the new year that you can tell us about?
Yeah, so last year, particularly in response to the pandemic, we did some research. And the feedback suggested that what we really should be focusing on in the next year should be loneliness, frailty and dementia. So with that in mind, over the next year, so for loneliness, we're hoping to extend our new befriending service, which we began as a result of the pandemic back in March. Frailty, We have our Help at Home service, which offers domestic support, including shopping. And in Brighton, we actually also have the crisis team as well, who will provide short-term support for people who need a bit of help, possibly after a fall or a hospital stay. So we're hoping that, you know, we can keep people independent for longer. And dementia, we're going to be looking to support more people and their carers living with dementia. It's a project that we already run, but we're hoping we can increase this over the next year.
Details of that are on the website and available on the phone?
Absolutely, yeah. Just do get in touch and always up for a chat. So if you want to have a conversation about things you really need or you'd like to see from us, do get in touch. We're always happy to have a little chat. And equally, if you're interested in making a donation or maybe volunteering as well, we have lots of opportunities. We'd be like very pleased to hear from you.
That's wonderful, Rowan. Happy New Year. And finish off with that contact telephone number again.
So again, if you fancy getting in touch or you're concerned about anyone, do get in touch with us. Telephone number is 01903 731 800, and the email is info@agukwsbh.org.uk.
Now it's time for the second of my good news stories, for which we go back to March. It concerns a plant known as kelp, which grows around the coasts, and a project being run by Sussex Wildlife Trust called Help Our Kelp. To find out more, I spoke to Henry Brocklebank of Sussex Wildlife Trust, and I began by asking her to tell me what kelp is.
So kelp is a seaweed. There's about 7 different species that are found around the world, and I think lots of people will recognise it from probably some David Attenborough documentaries like Blue Planet, where you traditionally have what's known as kelp forest. It grows ideally in about 10 to 20 metres of sea. It has a steadfast that holds it tight to the seabed, and then it can grow all the way up to many, many metres, and it can grow several feet a day. On a marine level, kelp is like the equivalent of trees, where there's lots of wildlife that is provided with niches, we call it, because of all the different variety of habitat that the kelp provides. So on its fronds you will get all sorts of, like, mollusks or marine snails feeding off the leaves, and then you get habitat underneath around the steadfast that young fish use to hide from predators. So it's not just about the single species, it's about the whole environment that that species creates.
So it's a very important part of the marine ecosystem then?
Absolutely.
And I gather that there used to be kelp beds stretching 40 kilometres along the West Sussex coastline, all the way from Selsey to Shoreham.
We know that the vast kelp forest that was found off the Sussex coast has literally, within my lifetime, since the 1980s, rescinded and rescinded and rescinded until there's literally hardly anything left, like a few percentage left of what was originally there.
That's a very disastrous decline then. What's the cause of the decline?
There's several causes. I think the primary issue has been the constant disturbance of the seabed due to the trawling patterns that happen. So trawling is a fishing practice that drags heavy gear along the seabed. So in doing so, that's ripping kelp and other species off the seabed. And what kelp needs is the opportunity to then regenerate. And so then when we had, for example, the huge storm in 1987, that ripped off a huge amount of kelp, which is completely understandable. That's normal for a storm situation of that intensity. But it never got the chance to regenerate again on account of the fact that it was constantly being gone over again and again. And so the constant disturbance meant that we have lost that kelp. It's still holding on in little patches. We know that there's still bits there, but we want to see it regenerate across the area.
And will it regenerate if left alone?
Well, we think some areas will naturally regenerate, because there's anecdotal evidence that kelp is still there in some places and young plants are being retrieved sometimes. So we know it's trying to get itself back on its feet in places. But there might be some areas where it doesn't regenerate at all. And so we're working with a whole range of academic institutions. On land, people do tree planting, for example. So is there an equivalent in the in the kelp world, can you plant kelp? And actually, within the academic world, there is all sorts of different opportunities that are out there. So I think, first of all, it's a sit back and see, and let's see what does regenerate naturally.
Has the building of the wind farm had any effect?
The wind farm is actually further offshore than the area that's where we've recorded the kelp. The decline of kelp has been happening since the 1980s, so it was well and truly on a bad trend by the time the wind farm was even dreamt up.
Now, I gather that there's a new bylaw that has been passed which will protect the kelp. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Okay. In our inshore waters, that fishing operations are managed by the Inshore Fisheries Conservation Authority. And so what they have done is created a bylaw, which is a fully democratic process that they have a board, which is made up of representatives of a whole range of marine stakeholders. And they've spent 2 years collecting evidence about the impact on fisheries of actually taking the trawling out to 4 kilometres from the coast. This would enable the area where we know that the kelp was to be able to naturally regenerate. So it's not stopping trawling altogether, it's just moving it off further offshore so it can happen, but not here, please. And what we're hoping is that by doing so, not only will there be a huge boost for biodiversity, but there'll be improved water quality, there'll be increased dissolved oxygen, increased in pH, because the acidity of the sea is a big concern for us, an increased carbon sink over time. We all know about carbon sequestration. Kelp and the biomass that is associated with kelp is all going to sequester carbon. There's a reduction in wave impact on our coast as a result of having significant kelp there. And most importantly, a significant enhancement to the ecology, which means the fishery biomass. So there will be species that are commercial fish species, which will have an opportunity, a sanctuary, so that that will in turn help improve the fish that's available to our fishing community.
So it sounds as if everybody benefits then.
Yeah. We have one extremely exciting advocate for the Sussex kelp work, and that is Sir David Attenborough himself. So he was asked if he would like to be involved in this campaign and replied immediately and agreed to narrate the most beautiful film that's been produced about the potential of the kelp forest in Sussex. So if your listeners would like to watch this absolutely wonderful film, if they go to the Sussex Wildlife Trust website and just put in Help Our Kelp, they will see this magnificent film, which is about 7 minutes long. We've shown it to children who've been thrilled, to people of all ages and backgrounds. Everybody is really touched by the absolute beauty that is underneath our seas that most people don't realise is there. I think in an era where there's so much environmental doom and gloom and, ooh, isn't it awful, this is happening and that's happening, which is all awful, this is something that is actually really gives us a sense of hope that we can do something, that we can make a difference, and we can do that on a local level.
It all sounds very hopeful. Henry Brocklebank, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
I was talking to Henry Brocklebank of the Sussex Wildlife Trust about their Help Our Kelp campaign. If you want to find out more, and indeed to watch the short film narrated by David Attenborough, which Henry mentioned, you can go to the Sussex Wildlife Trust's website, which is at Sussex Wildlife Trust, which is typed all as one word with no spaces, .org.uk/helpourkelp, which is also typed as one word with no spaces. And kelp is spelt K-E-L-P. That's sussexwildlifetrust.org.uk/helpourkelp. Or you can phone them on Brighton 492630. That's 01273 492630. And you can email them on inquiries@sussexwt.org.uk. That's inquiries@sussexwt.org.uk. And now it's back to Chris English for the next item.
Christmas is over and done with. But as we enter into the new year, we don't know quite what it's going to bring. But if you're homeless, or worse still, living on the streets, or don't know where your next meal is coming from, that must be even worse. Well, joining us is Andy Winter from Brighton Housing Trust. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Chris.
Now, just those questions. How awful must it be for people haven't got a roof over their heads, don't know where the next meal is coming from?
Well, they say Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year, but for somebody who's homeless, it actually brings to them a reminder that of all the things that they've lost. So the last few days have been particularly difficult for a large number of people who don't have a home. They don't have families around them. So what we've been able to do is we've continued to operate a small service at First Base Day Centre. And we've managed to do that throughout the pandemic. While other services closed their doors, we remained open. We haven't been able to work with the same numbers of people over this period that we have normally work with. We've been able to provide services for people who are on the street. But the good news this year, believe it or not, there is some good news this year, is that the City Council has done fantastically well to provide accommodation for over 250 people who might otherwise be rough sleeping. So most people have had accommodation. There are a small handful who have chosen not to take advantage of the accommodation that's made available. And then there's also a further group who are coming onto the streets on a regular basis, people who are new to rough sleeping. Believe it or not, during the pandemic, we've seen between 8 and 12 new rough sleepers each and every week during the year. Now, for some of them, they've had accommodation tied to employment. Of course, the bottom has fallen out of the employment market. And with the loss of their job, they have lost their accommodation as well. When people have been in relationships and are stuck indoors with each other, it has tested many relationships to breaking point. And so as a result, relationships have ended and people have moved out. And while in the past they might have been able to take advantage of the support of friends and families, because of the lockdown, people have been reluctant to take others into their own home. And also, it is very claustrophobic to always have someone sleeping on your sofa. And so people's social and financial resilience has been tested to breaking point. And for many, they have, sadly, during the course of the year, ended up on the streets. But the City Council has done well to accommodate the overwhelming majority of those. There is food available for people in the accommodation. But for many of them, it's pretty boring. So there have been some other charities who've done fantastic work, making sure that they've had things like Game Boys and puzzle books and televisions and just the very basics to while away many, many hours of boredom. When people have come into First Base, we've continued to provide those services we have always provided. So if you were to go into First Base at 8 o'clock one morning, having slept rough, first thing you would do, you'd take a couple of towels and you could go and have a shower. That in itself has proven a challenge for staff at First Base Day Centre, because after each person has had a shower, we have to make sure it's decontaminated, not decontaminated in a pejorative sense, but we have to make sure that it's COVID secure. So we've had things like that to do. There is breakfast available for people. There are hot meals available for people. So we've managed to do a lot of things, but not for the same number of people that we would usually work for. That in itself has posed a challenge for us, because even though our numbers are right down, the costs of maintaining the service have remained almost unaltered.
So how can our listeners help? Is it just by donating money or clothing or food, or what can they do?
If they want to donate food, yes, please, not to First Base, but to the food banks. Whitehawk Food Bank, I think there's one in Dorset Gardens, there's the Hangleton Food Bank. support the local food banks. They are doing an incredible service and have been doing so throughout the year. Yes, we can always use things like warm jumpers and coats and waterproof coats. You know, we've had some terrible weather in recent weeks, and we do need people to have waterproof clothing if they are out on the streets. Money is always very, very much appreciated. Our fundraising at Brighton Housing Trust has hit the buffers. We have a whole range of fundraising activities throughout the year. We anticipate in most years raising up to £300,000 to keep First Base going, to keep our advice centres going. And the work of the advice centres is critically important, because last year they prevented 927 households from becoming homeless. We have three advice centres, one in Brighton, one in Eastbourne, one in Hastings. And people often ask me, what is the best way to end rough sleeping and homelessness? And my answer is, let's end it before it begins. If we can actually prevent households from losing their home, then we don't have to pick up all the pieces. The families don't have the disruption to their lives. The children don't have to have disruption to their education. So prevention of homelessness is essential, but we do need the generosity of the public to maintain that service. And when people do end up on the streets, for the reasons I outlined earlier, then we do need to have services like First Base. So we anticipated £300,000 in a normal year. This year, we are finding raising £120,000 a challenge. So that is a loss of £180,000. Now, a figure like that means nothing to most people. If someone says to me £180,000, I can't even imagine what that means. But actually, if someone donates £10, we can make sure people have a meal, that they can have a shower, they can wash their clothes, they can use the clothes store that we have at First Base. So £10 makes a huge difference to an individual on the street. So don't worry about the £180,000. Think about the £5, the £10, the £30 that we rely on. And it is the generosity of the people of Brighton and Hove that makes this massive, massive difference to the lives of people who are unfortunate enough to find themselves on the streets.
And how can people donate those sums?
They can go onto our website, which is www.bht.org.uk, and they'll find buttons that they can press. They can send a cheque and made payable to Brighton Housing Trust, care of 144 London Road, Brighton, BN14PH, P for Peter, H for House.
Chris English was talking to Andy Winter of the Brighton Housing Trust. If you'd like to find out more about them or make a contribution, you can go to their website, which is www.bht.org.uk. That's www.bht.org.uk. Or you can email them at inquiries@bht.org.uk. That's inquiries@bht.org.uk. You can also phone them on Brighton 645400. That's 01273 645400. Or you can write to them at 144 London Road, Brighton, BN14PH. That's 144 London Road, Brighton, BN14PH. And now it's back to Chris again for a rather more cheerful item, which was first broadcast in September to end our programme.
Now, I wonder how many people have heard of Team Domenica in Brighton. Well, of course, you may or you may not have done, but if you've been to the Pavilion Gardens Cafe, you may have seen a young lady wearing a badge called Domenica. Tell us all about Team Domenica is Rosa Monckton. Good morning.
Good morning. And I love the fact that you have started with Domenica at the Pavilion Garden Cafe, because that was her first paid job. She was so happy the day she heard she was going to receive paid work there. Team Domenica has been going now for 4 years. We are a training centre for adults with learning disabilities. And the whole thrust of what we do is to get people with learning disabilities into paid employment.
And Domenica is your daughter?
Domenica is my daughter. Domenica has Down syndrome. And she is a very cheerful, able, wonderful daughter.
Everybody will see, if they look at the video on your website, that's amazing that she does that and does everything with a smile. But we're actually talking about another venture now, and the reopening of the cafe in the Dome foyer. Is that in addition to the Pavilion Gardens?
Our main base in Brighton is in Preston Road. That's where we have our big training centre and training cafe. We also run the cafe and Hove Library. But with the advent of COVID and social distancing, we simply didn't have enough space for our new intake in September, plus the fact that a lot of our candidates who should have left or got into jobs haven't, also because of COVID. So I approached Andrew Comben at the Dome and asked him if he would consider the possibility of a Cafe Domenica there. And he and his team have been so welcoming, so understand what we do. And of course, the Dome has a history of supporting vulnerable people through the arts and through all the other things that they do. And so we are very, very excited. It's a huge privilege, actually, to be able to run a cafe in such an iconic building.
And what's in store when people go into the Dome Cafe? Will they have the full menu, or is it a special menu?
We're going to we'll be doing obviously the usual sort of coffees and teas. We'll be doing breakfasts, hot breakfasts, cold breakfasts, and then a variety, you know, a soup of the day, a sort of spinach feta tart, toasted sandwiches, you know, the usual sorts of things that you would expect in a cafe. But of course, the unexpected is our candidates who will be working there and training there.
And should people make any special allowances, or is that the thing not to do?
I mean, unexpected things do happen. Of course they do. And we've had some extremely funny moments. And I think generally people understand and they get it without having to have an explanation. I mean, what we do in our Preston Road Cafe, we have a sort of leaflets on the table. You know, this is what we are, this is what we do. But no, generally people understand. I mean, we just want people to, you know, treat them with compassion and kindness and understanding.
And what do you think your people get from this?
What they get is what should be everybody's right, which is to be included, to be part of society, in a world which is theirs just as much as it's ours. And it just gives them the self-confidence. It also educates the public. And for them, it is, we hope, a stepping stone into paid employment. We're working with over 40 businesses in Brighton, and we have achieved a 72% employment rate against a national average of 5.6%. So the course that we do and all the training that we give is really working and making a difference.
And what did the employers get from employing your people?
They get somebody who is really wants to be there, somebody who is not going to elbow people out of the way to try and climb that greasy pole. Generally, with a smile. And employers say to us they get an enormous amount, actually, because it's, I think what they realise is that there's a shared humanity, and it works with people working alongside as well. They get a lot from it.
Do you welcome volunteers? Are you looking for volunteers?
We always need volunteers. Absolutely we do, yes.
And how do people get involved?
First off, they should just send us an email. If you go to our website, which is www.teamdomenica.com, there's a contact details there. But we always need volunteers.
Rosa, that's lovely. Thank you very much for joining us, and more power to your elbow, and good luck to Domenica in the latest project.
Thank you so much. Really nice to talk to you. Thank you for letting me come on your show.
And it brings our programme to an end for this time. It just remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme, and indeed on behalf of Chris English, my co-presenter, to wish you all the very best for 2021. Goodbye.